Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest and only Doom Patrol-related podcast.
Yeah, I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. You can send us emails to waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, and all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can also find on Twitter the sentient show account Wilfred, who is at WFDpod.
Yeah, and today it's part of JL May, finally. We're here in JL May. What is JL May, you're wondering? It's a podcast crossover where we're all looking at a JLA comic, which is called JLA Year One. So this started a few weeks ago in Waiting for Doom. No, Fire and Water,
yes.
163. So they did the first two issues of JLA Year One. And then the Paraficionates episode 6 did 3 and 4. And now it's our turn. Waiting for Doom. We're doing 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. So very exciting. And we can't do this alone. It's too big. So we needed the help of two Americans. So we've called in Doug Savisha and Ange.
Dr. Hooray! Ange.
Morning.
Hey, thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Happy to be here.
Great to have you here, fellas. And I'm going to fire up the big monitor, and I can see that we have some new listeners. So I can see the Sutherlands are here, and Jimmy McGlinchey's here, and Jeff Nelderton's here. Look at that. That's amazing.
Right. Yes. Okay.
So, how has your week in comics been, lads?
Yeah, it was Free Comic Book Day on Saturday, so I headed to the store with my youngest daughter, and we grabbed some free loot, and while I was there, you know, I always like to support the store, so I grabbed a couple of comics that I just thought I would try, including Super Zero by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Conner,
okay.
Which is a really fun book about an adolescent girl who's desperate to get superpowers, and so recreates a lot of the events that have given superpowers to people in comic books. So she, you know, wants her parents to get killed, thinking that will spur her on. And she like douses herself with ants, hoping that getting bitten by insects will do it. So there's a lot of meta commentary about comics. It's kind of fun.
So I hope my daughter doesn't do that. What about you, Doug?
Well, Wednesday was New Comic Book Day. So got the stack of comics, including a Howard the Duck drawn by Kevin McGuire. And then Wednesday night went and saw Civil War and saw it again Thursday night. And then
so
as
you liked it then.
And said Saturday. Yeah, it was like an apology for Batman v Superman. And then some.
Okay.
And then
why did you wait so long to see it? Like we went saw it
Thursday
a couple
night.
Weeks ago.
Yeah, I see how you guys are. Australian time, right?
Yeah.
Well, look at it this way, though. You guys got to see that first, so you're in the future. So the world's going to end for you guys first.
Oh, we know that.
Just saying.
Oh.
Yeah. And then there was Free Comic Book Day and, you know, all the goodness that goes along with that.
Mm. Right. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I also went and saw Captain America Civil War last weekend. That was lots of fun. Really enjoyed that. Had Free Comic Book Day. I didn't get along to my store till sort of later in the day, which didn't worry me too much because I guess I prefer newer or younger readers to go along to it more. So, and my store said that they had a lot of new faces coming in through the door, which was great. And the highlight for me of New Comic Book Day was King's Quest from Dynamite Comics with the Flash and Mandrake and Prince Valiant and the Phantoms all together again. I got a bit excited by that.
The Flash?
Yeah. Oh, not the Flash, Flash Gordon.
Good.
See how excited I was? But yeah, that was really cool. So how about you, Paul? What happened in your week?
Well, it was Free Comic Book Day on the weekend, so I stayed at home and didn't go anywhere. but I kept busy. Yeah, I wasn't able to make it, but my good friend Moby went along to the store and picked up a couple of things for me. But other than that, just been catching up on my comic reading. So I've got a huge pile of comics come from the library now. So reading a bit of Judge Dredd. This is a lovely thing about the libraries in my area, which is Canberra, is you can basically go to a site and suggest books that you want them to buy. So a while ago, I was hanging to read some Judge Dredd, and I found Day of Chaos Part 2. So I asked them to buy Day of Chaos Part 1, and then I read those two. And then I asked them to buy Judge Dredd Fallout, which is the next book in after Day of Chaos. And I'm really enjoying Judge Dredd. It's fantastic stuff. It's gotten, I don't know. I read Judge Dredd when it was fairly new, and it's very black and white. Like, criminals do something, he shoots them, move on. Mm. And the comic nowadays is really basically reflecting the real world. There's all these, righteous actions that look clean cut now are all raising problems in the future. So Day of Chaos is like in one of the earlier comics, Judge Dredd launched nukes at the Sovs and destroyed one of their mega cities. And Day of Chaos is basically a whole group of militant terrorists and their revenge on Mega City One. So that doesn't sound like the real world at all, does it?
No.
And then it just keeps getting into things. Like it gets into refugees and the role of, private contractors and all this sort of stuff. But it's, done with ultra violence. But, everything isn't black and white anymore. And I think it's probably much more reflective of the real world than you'll find in superhero comics these days, just because it's able to do that in Mega City One in the science fiction universe. Like there isn't a superheroic status quo and, superheroic, Superman is always the hero, whereas Judge Dredd is sometimes, the bad guy. It's quite interesting. Yeah, heavy, sorry.
that's fine. That's fine. Just
sounds a lot different than the Sylvester Stallone, Rob Schneider movie.
Oh, God. You had to. You just had to. Oh, Edge. Oh, thank God I can hear some ticking. That can only be the doom clock. Okay, so looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last issue we had of a Doom Patrol book was number 22 of Volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run, cover date of July 2011, going on sale May 4th of that same year, so it's been 5 years and 1 week since our last actual Doom Patrol book. But we only have to hold out till September, gang, so, we're getting there. We're getting there.
We're getting there.
The last appearance of the team was just over 9 months ago in two different comics, All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And this week, in Doom Patrol history, this is good, this week in Doom Patrol history saw the release of absolutely no Doom Patrol books at all.
Hmm. Wow. It's like today.
That's like, yeah.
Yes, I scoured Mike's Amazing World of Comics, and nothing. Nothing at all. So, as you were.
Not even like a Titans appearance of Robot Man?
I didn't go that far. I was looking for Doom Patrol. It had to be a Doom Patrol book. That's how the Doom Clock works. I'm sorry, Doug.
Wilfred didn't go that far, huh?
Look, it's lucky when you can get anything out of Wilfred. he's going to punish me later, I'm sure. That's it for the Doom Clock this week.
And when the evening comes, we smile.
In 1994, Mark Waid, Brian Augustine, and Barry Kitson began exploring the beginnings of the world's greatest superhero team over an epic 12-issue comic maxi series. And yes, we've just begun. That team was the Justice League of America, and that comic was JLA Year One. In 2016, 8 podcasts will come together to cover this series in a single month. That month is JL May. Featuring The Fire and Water Podcast, The Power of Fishnets, Waiting for Doom, The Lantern Cast, Supermates Podcast, The Idlehead of Diabolu, Comic Reflections, and Views from the Long Box. Each podcast will cover one or two issues of JLA Year One, and then coverage will move from show to show. It all starts in the Fire and Water Podcast with issues one and two. Yes, we've just begun. JL May, an epic month for an epic series. Available where you find all good podcasts.
So time for Doomsplaining, and today on the show we're doing JLA Year 1 Issues 5 and 6, which is part of the JL May Mighty Crossover between 8 podcasts. And because it was a special occasion, we invited Doug and Ange in. So Doug runs the Doom Patrol blog My Greatest Adventure 80, is that the name of it, Doug?
That's right, sir. Blogspot.com.
And Ange runs a Supergirl blog with some ridiculous name that no one can ever remember.
I know, I'm sorry. Comic Box Commentary.
Comic Box Commentary. Okay, good. And that's about Supergirl, and it's excellent. But Ange is a massive Doom Patrol fan and been a big fan of the show from the start, and Doug's been here from the early days too. And we're all one happy Doom community, which is why we've brought them in to help us Doomsplain JLA Year 1.
And I think we also have to thank Ange for helping initiate JL May in a manner of speaking.
Yeah. Ange was reading JLA 1 and tweeting about it, and that sort of got us all thinking, didn't it?
Yeah, it was back in February, and I was on a week's vacation, and I've been doing the Wade Kitson Legion books over on a Legion blog, and I said I would read this, and as I'm reading it, there's just so much Aquaman stuff, Doom Patrol stuff, Black Canary stuff, that I was just tweeting out stuff to the podcasting community saying, like, boy, why don't you guys do a review of this? Because it seems to have so much great stuff for everybody.
Yeah. And Mike and I are pretty lazy. We didn't want to do the entire
Excuse you?
All right. Sorry, I'll clarify. Mike is lazy. We didn't want to do the whole thing, so we thought, why don't we get everyone in the podcasting community to pitch in with the issues, and that way we can cover it all with just a couple of bits. And we're even lazier than that, because I asked Ange and Doug to do the synopsis of the episode of the issues, because, yeah, so very lazy. I get it from Mike. Anyway, so, Ange, can you take us through JLA Year 1, issue number 5?
Certainly. So JL Year One, number 5, was cover dated of May 1998, but came out on March 11th, thanks to Mike's Amazing World, and sold for the princely sum, I believe that's what we say here, for $195 US. The title of the book is A League Divided. It was written by Mark Waid and Brian Augustin, with art by Barry Kitson, inked by Michael Baer, with letters by Ben Lopez, color by Pat Garrahy, and edited by Peter Tomasi, who was an editor before he started to write books. The cover is a great shot of the Doom Patrol fighting the League. Every cover of the series is sort of a look as if it's a newspaper. So there's a big shot of the two teams fighting. And I think that the cover is a great perspective, sort of looking down upon a very giant Rita as everybody else is sort of skirmishing around her.
Yeah.
We start out in Manchester, Alabama, of all places, where they just see some normal folks going about their everyday work, talking about the newly formed Justice League, talking about who their favorite is. There's always seem to be some sort of lecherous men talking about how they love that Black Canary is in leather. And then as these people are sort of going about their everyday business, the Brotherhood of Evil shows up, and Monsieur Mala shoots everybody with this sort of beam that removes portions of their bodies, like their arms and their heads, and creates these sort of weird-looking purple putty-like creatures that are sort of swarming the city while the remaining portions of humans are sort of panicked and running about. Meanwhile, in California, Green Lantern and Aquaman are teaming up with Green Arrow, who is not an official member of the League, working to try to save people from a flash flood that's happened. And you kind of get a sense that they're still trying to gel as a team. Green Lantern seems to be sort of a glory hound, and Aquaman is sort of saying to himself he's not sure if this is the right place for him to be. Does he want to be part of this team? So that sort of theme of trying to figure out whether or not they want to be together sort of runs throughout this whole series. We see Barry at his lab, and he has to blow off Iris again because there's some leak business, and he's wondering where the line between Flash and him sort of starts and ends. Finally, the whole team gets together over at the headquarters, and everybody's just sort of feeling each other out. Green Lantern and Aquaman are grumbling at each other.
Excuse me? Not literally.
Sorry about that. Not literally. Oh. You know. Oh, you randy Australians. You know, the other leaguers are wondering why Green Lantern didn't hit sort of the signal device so they could help with the flood. And then Black Canary comes screeching in on a motorcycle, sort of stomps up to everybody and just says, who here is married? Because she has just recently learned that her mother had an affair with Starman and the Justice Society, and she doesn't want to get involved with somebody who's married. And then John actually says, you know, I was married. We get a little bit of his backstory, a flashback to Mars. But they're still trying to figure out, you know, how they're going to work together as a unit. To contrast that, we then go to Midway City. We're in the Chief's mansion. There's a very Silver Age feeling scene with the Doom Patrol. And, you know, Cliff and Larry are trying to move some giant pieces of equipment around the lab. And they begin to, you know, insult each other. And then they threaten to fight each other, and Rita has to show up, and she embiggens herself and grabs them and separates them and says that she's sort of sick of dealing with children. And then the chief shows up and shows them, I believe on a giant monitor, that, you know, this terrible thing that's happening in Manchester, Alabama, by the Brotherhood of Evil, and that the patrol has to go and help. And Cliff gives probably the best line in the book: "We're gone, Daddy-O. Color us vamoosed. Let's go whistle some Dixie." So very much a Silver Age feel to this, to their interactions. Mm. Over in Manchester, the Brotherhood of Evil sort of realizes that the Justice League is going to show up. We see Madame Rouge. We see Mr. Morden, who later becomes Mr. Nobody in the Morrison books.
Spoilers.
They're trying to figure out how they're going to defend themselves. And, you know, the League is flying, and, you know, Black Canary is telling Flash that, you know, she found out that her mother had an affair, that the Justice Society turned out to be, you know, sort of human, and she had always put them up on a pedestal. And they arrive in Manchester, and the Doom Patrol is already there. And the people rush to the Justice League because, of course, they look human and glamorous, and the Doom Patrol sort of sulks a little bit, you know, saying, you know, of course, you know, they're going to flock to them and not us. But there's a great bit that happens as well where the Flash sort of looks at the Doom Patrol and says, they're lonely. They're very much apart from the human race. Can you imagine how that must feel? And in the background of that panel is Aquaman. And that's exactly how Aquaman feels throughout this whole book. Mm. So it sort of shows that maybe they don't quite know each other well enough to understand what they're feeling. But we end with a great fight scene. All of these sort of purple putty creatures that have been created by the brain sort of, you know, amass and attack the League. They're, of course, innocent people who have been gene morphed in some way. The League and the Doom Patrol have to team up. They finally sort of corral all of these things underneath the dome that Green Lantern has made. And at the very end, Miss Yamala shows up, hits the Justice League with this gene ray. And we see that the parts of the body that gives each Justice League their power has disappeared. So the arm that Green Lantern has his ring on is gone. The Flash's legs are gone. The Canary's voice is gone. And John's eyes have disappeared. And the last splash page is the brain, who has sort of amalgamated the body of all of these parts with a torso of this purple putty stuff, and his brain in a dome right on the top. Yep. Tackling away with evil. So really, I would say a pretty jam-packed issue. These are not quick reads. It's pretty dense, both with action and characterization.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah. Wow, there's a lot in here. I mean, the brain steals Flash's junk as well.
Exactly right.
And his speed.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, God, Paul.
Sorry. What do people think of this? What stood out to you guys?
I really like that the Justice League are still even though it's the fifth issue in the storyline, they're still getting to know each other and becoming a team. And like you said, Ange, Green Lantern is a glory hound in this. He knows very well that he should have, you know, activated the communicator and got the rest of the team to go and help out with that flood. But he was like, oh, you know, I'm Green Lantern, I'm pretty cool. You know, it's like, no, you're in a team, dude. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, this isn't the first time or the last time that we'll see that Hal has a lot of hubris about what he can accomplish with that ring and sometimes fails. So, you know, I just think it's great because it's clear that this is the beginning of not only the League, but their superhero careers, right? Because they're trying to not only figure out how they're going to be part of this team, they're trying to figure out how do I balance work life, you know, superheroics.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I like about this is that throughout, the Flash, you know, enjoys the company of the League because he says, I can't talk to anybody else about the superheroing stuff. You know, thank God you guys are around so that I can sort of bounce the stuff off you. I do think that adding the Doom Patrol to this issue was great because really there are compare contrasts to the team, right? That the Doom Patrol is supposed to be the dysfunctional team in the DCU, and they work pretty good as a unit in comparison to Young Lee.
Yep.
I like though the Doom Patrol's introductory scene. It's so 60s. Like they're, you know, Cliff is moving a massive piece of machinery, and Negative Man is buzzing around him, just being annoying and causing him to drop it. And then they go to have a fight, and then Rita whacks a giant hand in between them and then holds them up while they bicker. And then, you know, the Chief interrupts and said there's something going on, and, you know, see that he's got his giant monitor fired up with an image. And, you know, it's straight out of the 60s comic. It's, you know, it's great.
And he sends them off with, go, go!
And in this scene, Cliff is dialogued by Bob Haney.
Yeah, I just wonder if Cliff's brain is actually, you know, from a guy in the 50s that just never, you know, matured into the current times, because he's really straight out of Happy Days in here.
You guys have been reading comics longer than Mike and I, I'm pretty sure. So how do you feel about this version of the Justice League? Is it your Justice League, or is it, you know, is there something missing from this? You know, you guys believe that Batman and Superman belong there. How do you guys fall on the Justice League membership roster?
Justice League for me was the Super Friends initially. So this was not my Justice League growing up, but this series kind of made my Justice League happen. I was okay. My introduction to the larger DC universe was Crisis. So post-Crisis was really when I got my bearings on the whole DC universe. And for them to kind of do some minor adjustments, in my eyes at least, to the Justice League's history, I was okay with that, especially when they gave us year one to kind of set that table and fill out that cast and explain what these five were doing together. But yeah, it's missing a few characters. You're right.
You know, I've been reading comics for a while, and so the Justice League that I first encountered was really like the Cary Bates, Dick Dillon era, sort of in the late 70s. And that league had to be, you know, 30 members deep. You know, this was the Zatanna, Firestorm, constantly recruiting sort of a group. And so I really liked this because I kind of like a smaller team for the league. And I don't feel, and I'm sure I'm going to get chastised, that Superman and Batman have to be part of the Justice League. I always, when you read those stories, it's always like, well, Superman could probably take care of this by himself, right? You know, really, do we need like a whole group of superheroes to smash the Materiopticon that Dr. Destiny is using? Superman could do that from space, you know? So I kind of like a tighter knit group without sort of those big two or even big three present as a way to showcase these other guys. And in the post-Crisis universe, I actually liked the fact that Black Canary was one of the first members. I thought that that was a great way to promote her character into something more sort of critical for the league, and for the universe.
Mike, you're cool with this rundown of the league. Is this your league?
Not, it's not quote-unquote my league. I think kind of like Doug, the Justice League has sort of always just been there, starting with like the Super Friends. So I'm used to there being differences in the team membership, but I still really enjoy this story. But it, to me, it's like, okay, it's just a different version of the Justice League. Personally, I still prefer having the big three of Supes, Bats, and Wundy in there. But I do get your point, Ange, about, you know, why would Superman need anyone else, really? But yeah, I appreciate this story for what it is. It's a good origin story of the beginning of the Justice League. It's just a bit of a different one. But, you know, I'm used to changes in the team all the time. So, hey, it's all good with me. It's well written and well drawn. So, yeah, two thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, I came into DC Comics on the post-crisis side. So my experiences pre-crisis were with a lot of the books where it didn't really matter, like Batman and Swamp Thing, and then, you know, Titans and things like that. But, yeah, it took me a while to realize, okay, what is the difference between, you know, the pre-crisis? Because I hadn't really got my head around Earth 2 and the Justice Society being from there, and some of the villains came from there. So, yeah, it's interesting. And I'd never looked at this and thought, well, that's changed. I thought, oh, this is the Justice League, and went along with it from that point. But, I mean, my first Justice League was probably the Bwahaha one, which so many of us enjoy. So, but, yeah, interesting. But, I mean, I can say, you know, we all universally love Snapper Carr, don't we?
Oh, I've got to mute myself because I'm going to swear.
I especially like
the current DC universe is missing.
Yeah, I love seeing him drive around in his jalopy. So,
wow. Yeah, he's cool, Paul. He's the coolest.
Well, there's nothing wrong with him in this book, is there, though? I mean, I mean, a lot of my familiarity with Snapper Carr is, you know, I've never seen him as an irritating sidekick to the Justice League. I've seen him as, you know, the guy in Owlman, where, you know, he was quite a fleshed out character and is teaching Owlman how to be human. And I really like that. And it did have a flashback issue of how he betrayed the team to the Joker. But I never read the original, so I've never seen the annoying surrogate, you know, reader relating person that Snapper's intended to be. So, but I've gotten the impression from lots of fans that they bloody hate him.
Sounds like you might have some homework.
Oh dear.
Yeah. There's kind of no reason to love him in those early stories because he's just like shooting out slang for no good reason. At least in this story, he's an electronics engineer and kind of keeps the headquarters up to snuff. So yeah. He has a purpose, you know, other than, you know, realizing that Lime can kill Starro from the first story, you know.
Right. And I'm interested by the Brotherhood of Evil in this. They call themselves just the Brotherhood, which, you know, they've got a girl in them, but whatever. And, like, I think Mr. Morden is there because Mark Waid has read Doom Patrol, so when Morrison was writing, so he knows the importance of Mr. Morden, so he's put him in. Monsieur Mellon not wearing a beret, slightly disappointing. And the other thing that struck me is I'm a big fan of the Brain having, like, a skull face on his little casing. Or, you know, some sort of representation of eyes. But I think the reason they didn't put them in is because he's going to steal Martian Manhunter's eyes in a few, you know, pages. So,
yeah.
So I can see why they didn't give him a face at this point, you know, even though it would be an artificial face. But, I don't know where he's got his teeth from at the end.
That's what I was going to ask. So where'd the mouth come from? Supposed to be Canary's mouth?
She's got fangs.
I know.
It's quite a big tongue as well. Anyway, that's, yes, interesting. But he's got her larynx, I believe, we find out. So.
Yes. God.
All right, so we move on. Oh, you comment?
Well, let's
Sorry.
Not move on just yet.
Okay.
Where did all the purple putty people go?
Didn't they wall them all up behind some...
Yeah, weren't they all...
Under his dome.
Yeah, and... under his dome that Green Lantern made.
That's the last we see of them.
I guess they're kind of forgotten then.
There's a whole story there waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
The but purple they, I mean, for their own series. Come on.
There's some really good comic book science in this comic, though. I think we'll agree.
Yeah.
I do love the Brain's amalgamated body of all the Justice League guys on that final page, where he is showing his fangs and he's got his arms outstretched to the sky. That's kind of cool, old school comic book villainy right there, which I love.
Yeah. All right, we ready to move on?
Sure.
Sure.
Thanks. Doug, hit us with issue 6.
Issue 6, titled A Sum of Their Parts, according to Mike's Amazing World, was on the rack April 8th, 1998. Written by Mark Waid, Brian Augustin, and Barry Kitson's actually credited as storyteller / artist. We've got two anchors here, Michael Baer and John Stokes, and I'm going to attribute John Stokes to some of the things that I don't like, which I'll get to at the end. Ken Lopez lettering, Pat Garrahy colorist, and we've got Heroic Age Separations. Guys, remember when separations had to be done?
I don't even know.
Basically, they took colors and had to find a way to digitize them and make them into plates. Sorry, printing nerd.
All right.
And then Pete Tomasi is Ange touched on editing this book.
Who did the stapling, Doug?
That was me.
Oh, nice. Well done.
Yeah. Good job. All right, so following last issue's surprise dismemberments, this issue opens with the Midway City headquarters of the Doom Patrol and the opening bit of dialogue, "How's Green Lantern doing, Chief?" And then we get into Chief fussing about and welding some Robot Man parts onto Green Lantern so that Green Lantern will be able to, be functional again. And Green Lantern shows his gratitude by trying to control the robot arm and blowing a hole in a nearby wall. As you do.
Yeah.
So then we get a quick rundown of the other leaguers who got parts swiped from them, and that reveals Martian Manhunter is compensating the loss of his eyes with a helmet that's quite a bit better than Mentos, in that it also has a visor, and that Martian Manhunter is nowhere near as annoying as Mento. Mm-hmm. And even without his sight, he claims to have 8 remaining senses, to which the Chief can only say, "Amazing." Chief has devised a voice box for Canary, who is missing her larynx, and Flash is missing his legs, so he's in an action chair of Chief's design. And what Chief has done is, with that ugly-ass action chair, is given Flash a way to tap the same energy that Negative Man comes from, so that Flash can send off a speedster in his stead. Mm. Aquaman managed to dodge the gene graft ray because, he's Aquaman, and I guess Brain didn't consider him much of a threat. His brain didn't want to have to talk to fish or something like that. Or as my notes say, it proves that he's even worthless to the Brotherhood of Evil.
Wow.
Hey, Rob. How you going, Rob? I'm joking.
Anyway, so the Doom Patrollers look on as the JLAers try to buoy their spirits and try to get back into the action. There's a beautiful panel at the bottom of the page numbers come and go throughout this. So at the bottom of page 4 of just the 3 Doom Patrollers standing watching on as they decide to take the next course of action. So then we cut to the Brotherhood and their plots. We get Madame Rouge, Monsieur Mala, again, minus his beret and with a really, really messed up nose, Brain, and then, as Ange pointed out in the previous issue, Eric Morden. Remember that name, kids, is what I was going to say, but that's why I threw in the spoilers. Then we get to a very Justice League type of trope where the team is split up into smaller pairings or groups. So we get a couple characters going this way and 3 more going this way, and this is something that, as we talked about, Paul, you were asking, is this my league? When the Justice League of Heroes break up like this, this becomes my league. They're great together, but then they go and do their own thing, and then they all come back together and truly function as a team. Mm. So the first pairing we get is Aquaman and Robot Man, to which Robot Man makes a hard sell on Aquaman to join the Doom Patrol, saying, and since we're going to throw out some Robot Man jargon, this one works pretty good. you might feel a tad more comfortable playing it in our combo. Just roll that around in your noggin. And holy Hannah, that's some joint. We got to find some way of popping that green crib like a zit. To which Aquaman can only reply to Robot Man, if I were to join your team, would you provide a translator? I can't understand a word you say. Just showing how out of place Aquaman might be, or how out of place Robot Man is. Mm. The two of them encounter Madame Rouge, and it's a fun comic booky fight that emphasizes Madame Rouge's power to stretch. Not really shapeshift or anything else, but stretch.
Stretch. Yep.
Which makes her a pretty easy target for Robot Man and Aquaman. The two of them come up with a plan. Aquaman shares the secret of Green Lantern's weakness, to which Robot Man borrows Aquaman's belt to bust through the green fortress that's around Manchester. Or that's around the Brotherhood in Manchester. Mm. Next up is Black Canary, Martian Manhunter, and Elastigirl. And in that leading into the action, we get a conversation between the three of them where Black Canary and Rita kind of bear a little bit of why Rita's feeling out of place, and the fact that, you know, with the size changing, that kind of got her to be squeezed out of Hollywood, as it were. And Martian Manhunter, being Martian Manhunter, can't let anybody feel bad, so he lets Rita know that he's a big fan. To which Monsieur Mala, of course, pops up, because as you do, gorillas pop up to ruin a day. And Rita manages to make short work of Mala by picking him up and throwing him. Why has this never been done before? How many more fights could Rita have ended just by picking up whoever and throwing him?
Mm. Yeah.
I'm sure. It's just for efficiency's sake here, and to keep it down to 4 pages. Next up is Flash, Negative Man, and Green Lantern. Larry sees through Hal Jordan's disguise when Hal uses the phrase, "Where there's a will, there's a way." Because nobody else has ever said that. And Negative Man goes, "Wait a minute, Hal Jordan? You used to say that corny phrase all the time." And Hal goes, "Yep, it's me." So this, I believe, is the first time that the two characters are connected, despite their similar pasts as test pilots and or pilots. And the connection Wade and Augustine establishes through the United States Air Force when both were flying for them. The three characters, Negative Man, Green Lantern, and Flash, wind up facing off against the return of the mighty robot Rod.
How long has it been since we've seen Rog? My God.
Just a little while.
Yeah.
The 60s.
Yeah, at least.
It proves to be no match for the Negative Man and Flash's not-so-negative speedster and the Green Lantern. So they get Morton, and then they notice the tower collapsing. So all of the Doom Patrol and Justice League now converge upon the Brotherhood, as Locust is likewise converging upon the Brotherhood. And turns out, well, Locust might have the upper hand, but they don't. In Negative Man's words, Locust is getting massacred, and Green Lantern chips in with our powers, no less. So you see the fight continue on, and Locust does indeed get massacred, leaving just Brain with his many parts, who captures the Doom Patrol and Justice League, as it were, or at least five of them, leaving Flash, Aquaman, and Black Canary to kind of survey the wreckage and gather some intel. Flash decides that Aquaman's the best option here, as Aquaman has a ton of willpower. Takes Aquaman into the fight against the Brain. Aquaman manages to overpower the Brain's will on Green Lantern's ring, channels the Cutlass, and cuts off the Brain from the rest of the purple putty body that's not Justice League parts. After which the team kind of powwows a little bit on the battlefield before going back to the Doom Patrol headquarters, where we have a lot of dialogue between the team, including, again, another solid pitch from Aquaman from Robot Man to have Aquaman join the team. Mm-hmm. And then also Green Lantern and Larry provide a little exposition as far as why Green Lantern never uses the ring to kill, so on and so on. Justice League are all back together. They take off. And the Doom Patrol are left watching them, just wondering if they'll ever see the League again. And, hey, those guys really got it together. Some team, huh? And Rita points out that to them, it just came naturally.
Mm. Gosh. All right. Thoughts, Ange?
I will completely agree that this idea of splitting up into smaller teams and trying to attack different portions of the villain's plan is very much a classic Justice League thing from back in like the Gardner Fox days. And I love that they do the, you know, the opening panel with the logo for each of the characters looking like straight off the Who's Who page. I think that's great. Yeah. I am totally endeared by the fact that John is a big fan of Rita Farr's films, you know, especially her chiller pictures, which kind of remind me of like the Hammer horror movies from Britain. My guess is sort of like low budget sort of horror movies. But at the end, she says to him, why, yes, I did meet Sigourney Weaver, and I think she would approve of you, right? So sort of like an alien thing, which I thought was very, very nice. So overall, I think that this was just a great thing. And one more thing that really stuck out is, you know, during this fight when Locust is getting massacred, Black Canary crawls up to one of the dying troops of Locust, and she says, "I can see your lungs. Try not to move." And I'm like, that can't be good. Right? She can see into his chest. But then
it's a medical assessment, Doug. I mean, Ange, medical assessment for us there.
Yeah, not good would be my short medical assessment. Yeah, he does drop a line that sort of says, like, you know, you won't be able to stop us. We have a plan to do this. So he sort of plants a seed for a bigger ongoing plot, which I always laugh. I don't know why bad guys would do that. You know, let me tell you my plan just as I die. Overall, I thought this was really wonderful. And of course, you know, we love the Doom Patrol. I thought that they were done very well in these two issues.
I love that if you have a fetish for Darth Vader and Black Canary, you get them combined.
Oh, really, Paul?
And do you?
Yeah. You want to overshare something there, Paul? Actually, don't.
Let's move on.
Yes, let's. I will join the chorus in saying the team-ups that are shown with, you know, the groups of two and threes. Yeah, I love that sort of thing in DC in general. Just sort of like the recent Justice League United and Brave and the Bold sort of stuff, where you get unexpected team-ups just working together to fight the bad guys. Just brilliant stuff. And completely agree on each character having their own little logo appear at the start of their scenes. Just great little touches like that. And yeah, it was just some awesome superheroics in the DCU with the Doom Patrol front and center there. And it was a bit sad when the Justice League were kind of like, yep, we're united, we're going to work together better. And I felt a bit bad that the Patrol were kind of a bit gloomy when they took off. I was like, but dudes, you showed them the way. Without you guys, they wouldn't have learned a good lesson in working as a team. Damn it. But then I realized I was yelling at a comic book. So, yeah, I love, of course, I love this these two parts of this storyline because it's got the Patrol. But yeah, I think overall they're really well done.
Yeah, and Aquaman saves the day by cutting a brain off.
Yeah, that was. I love how someone questions his decision to use the Green Lantern light to form a cutlass. And he says, hey, I just went with what I knew, you know. That's cool.
He's used cutlasses so often.
Mm, yeah.
And at the end, everyone has a little, you know, one-on-one chat. So you got Aquaman and Robot Man having chats, and Rita and Martian Manhunter, as you said, and Hal and Negative Man have a chat. So, yeah, because they're talking about responsibility and being a hero and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, I think the Doom Patrol are better at it than they give themselves credit for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it helps that we've been watching the Justice League in this series and all the little dysfunction that they have as they go. You know, it's not coming naturally like the Doom Patrol think.
Mm. It would be fun to see a series kind of like this as a Doom Patrol year one, a refreshing or a retelling of the origin, if we could keep it a little, you know, fun and upbeat like the Doom Patrol was initially.
Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
But it'll never happen.
No. Right. And Doug, you wanted to attack the art.
I don't want to attack the art. I just want to say that I love Barry Kitson. He's one of my favorite artists, one of my favorite professionals in comics. But, man, something really happens with Mala in this issue, and he does not look like a gorilla. He looks more like one of them purple putty people, or even a split off of what Brain's looking like. Not quite a gorilla. And to me, if you're a comic book artist, there are certain things you have to be able to draw. Normal people, expressions, backgrounds, rubble, gorillas. Especially a DC Comics artist.
Oh, yeah.
But Canary, Darth Vader combos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you look at Mala in 5 and you look at Mala here, he looks a little more gorilla-esque in 5, and the inks seem to be a little sharper, whereas here they get a little murkier. And I don't know if that's just a result of the time in the coloring, or truly the tag team inking duo that we have here, Bear and Stokes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a minor nit for sure.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah, I'm used to Mala looking a certain way, and, you know, my brain does sort of flicker when it's not the same way. And he needs a beret. I'm just, you know, it's just inappropriate for him not to wear some headgear in this.
When we first see him in this book, it's on the splash page that ends issue 4, like when we see that they're going to fight the Brotherhood of Evil. He doesn't even have the bandoleros in that. He's just a gorilla. So it's like, come on now. You need the bandoleros and you need the beret. Otherwise, you know, he may as well be Mighty Joe Young, you know, or.
Or Grodd. Jeez.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when my daughter was born and we put a Chewbacca soft toy in her crib at the hospital. And one of the nurses came and looked at her and went, "Oh, a monkey with a handbag."
Ouch. Ouch.
Big fan then, eh?
Yeah, in my head at the end of issue 4, like, Mala was in the shower. And they were like, "Quick, we need a group pose." And he kind of came out naked. Like, he was like, "Come here." But
yeah, yeah. The brain would have been, "The press is here. Quick, quick."
Now, we should discuss the cover to issue 6, which shows the combo body brain ranting while the league is strewn around him. I reckon Flash is hanging off one of his legs and looking up at his junk, I'd say.
So that's what it looks like. Hello, B.
Wow. It's
good that Brain has something equal as far as depth goes that he's standing on that equals Aquaman's chest there behind Mark Manhunter. Can be a piece of rubble that just so happens to be exactly the same depth.
Yes. He is well balanced.
And Canary's just kind of floating.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's wrong with Hal? He's just lost an arm.
Yeah.
Hal's a wuss.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's nothing without that ring. Yeah.
Yep.
Any other thoughts on these issues before we sign off from Doomsplaining?
Just a quick PSA for everybody. Whenever Barry Kitson is at a con, he does bring, he does sketches in sketchbooks if they're personalized. And he used to do them for free. I don't know if he still does. But I was at a con where he started doing watercolors. Guy, two people in front of me had this little pad of watercolors. And asked Barry if he'd mind, you know, watercoloring the sketch that he does. So I was fortunate enough to be, you know, two people behind. So Barry was able to get comfortable with the watercolor set before he got to mine.
Wow.
Had him do up a sketch of Firestorm, which I'll tweet out later at some point. Huh. But Barry also brings along original art to sell. And some of his original art includes thumbnails. And there were thumbnails at one point when I had seen Barry for, I forget if it was 5 or 6, and I just didn't have the funds.
Oh.
The worst part about it is it was only like $10, and I'd already spent all my other money.
Oh.
Because I knew I could get a free sketch for Barry. I'll come back to him last. And I did it. So it's out there, people. Some lucky man is going to be able to snag it if you haven't already.
It's a sad story, Doug.
It's kind of sad, but it's happy for whoever winds up with it.
Yeah. True.
I'll try to cheer things up. I'll just say, you know, we're covering these two issues, but the thing that I love about this series is that Wade really infuses the whole thing with a lot of different corners of the DCU to kind of show that the League is sort of the axle that the rest of the heroic community kind of rotates around. So at the end, you see everybody. I mean, you see the Justice Society, you see Blackhawks, you see, you know, everyone kind of gets folded into the major fight that comes at the end. So I just think that this is, you know, if you're looking almost for a primer on the DCU, this would be a great place to go.
Yep, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. And we got a Green Arrow in these two issues, or what, the first of these.
Yeah, for a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Young, without a goatee and all that. Right, I guess that's it for us with these issues. But if you want to continue on with the love fest for JLAU1, from here you need to listen to the next episode of the Lantern Cast, which should be out a day or two after our episode. And after the Lantern Cast, so they do issues 7 and 8. After Lantern Cast, you can listen to Cindy and Chris, who do Supermates, the Supermates podcast. They're doing issue 9. And then you can listen to the Idle Head of Diablo, which is Frank. Frank is amazing. He can do like a 2-hour podcast in an hour, just because of the way he speaks, and it's packed full of information. So Frank, and he does sound effects and voices, so Frank will take you through issue 10, and then Nicholas and maybe Jeff and maybe Spencer will help with Comic Reflections. They're doing JLA year 1 number 11, so that's Comic Reflections for that one, that she's getting towards later in the month. And then the final episode will be Views from the Long Box, doing issue 12. So that's Michael Bailey's podcast. He's a bit of a newcomer to podcasts, but, you know, we'll put up with him. Anyway, so that's where we go from here. So we'll have a promo now, and then we'll come back with the Mailbag of Doom.
To tell you the story of Green Lantern is to tell you the story of the birth of a universe. The origins of DC as a whole.
It's a magic emerald meteor from space in the 1940s.
It's the establishment of the JSA.
It's the birth of the Silver Age.
It's the introduction of a universal police force.
It's the formation of the JLA.
It's the emergence of the multiverse.
It's a crisis in both space and time.
It's an emerald dawn.
And it's an emerald twilight.
It's the brightest day.
And the blackest night.
And the Lantern Cast covers all of this and everything in between. We're Green Lantern's greatest advocates and fiercest critics. We've been fans for years, and it's the reason we're self-proclaimed Lanternologists.
So find us on iTunes and Stitcher and give us a listen. Because the history of Green Lantern really is the history of the DC Universe. And we've got the interviews, commentaries, reviews, and more to back it up.
Are you a geek looking for love? Do you long to find discussion on that special comic, TV episode, movie, or toy that's just right for you? Then why not try Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast? Chris and Cindy Franklin can match you with that certain something to satisfy your genre-related longings, no matter the subject. Superheroes.
But Robin's like, that was really nice of you, Batman. He's like, I had the room loaded with kryptonite. I can turn it on at any moment.
And here's the thing. You're talking about... Now, think about this. It's an apartment building owned by Batman. Do you not think that Batman doesn't have their place booked?
Sci-fi.
I don't know. You talk about being a sex symbol and stuff like that. I mean, I know a lot of girls thought, you know, William Shatner was it. But I had the biggest crush on George Takei. I did. I thought, you know...
Sorry about that. Horror.
And then when we see the Wolfman for the first time, he's in, I don't know. We don't
a
know.
A long sleeve shirt and a dark pair of pants.
With a belt.
With a belt. That's right. And his shirt's buttoned up all the way too.
Yeah, yeah.
And his arms.
So after he changes into this ferocious beast who can't talk and doesn't seem to be able to think beyond just attacking things.
He has lots of dexterity.
He went through his closet and...
I like this outfit better.
Action figures.
I actually had all the figures and all the accessories up to a certain point. I really literally did collect them all, you know.
Including She-Ra.
I was going to get to that, but...
Chris and Cindy have found their own happiness through discussions like this.
I could be friends with him. I could be down with this version of the Ultra Humanoid.
You could be friends with the dude who put his brain inside a mutated albino ape.
I married you!
Oh!
If you're tired of searching for geek love, then sign up with Supermates for free at supermatescomic.blogspot.com or on iTunes.
All right, time for the Mailbag of Doom, and we usually cover the question of the week that we ask in the last episode. And the last question was, what's your favorite 12-issue maxi series? So we heard from Big Tim Styles, who does the Fulo Williams comic, that we reviewed.
Oh, yes.
Way back. Anyway, he said the fave maxi series, Civil War. Two heroes, no villain pulling strings, just shit getting out of control. So, good little assessment of the story.
We heard from Rift at Rift1821, and he said, not sure if it meets the 12-issue criteria, but Infinity War, the biggest event I read while growing up.
I've met Rift. He hasn't grown up. we heard from Ryan Daly. And he said, I've still got Camelot 3000 in my to-read pile. Jeez. So you haven't really got an opinion then.
Endless Mike at M.A. Solko said, it's tough to top Grunewald's Squadron Supreme series. It built strongly and set the tone for many later books. Cool.
Cool. We heard from Mike Lapine at Lapine Is Me. And he said, currently Midnighter and Omega Men. Omega Men, depending on your pronunciation.
Hell yeah, they Omega are, Men. Yeah.
They are ending with issue 12. So.
Karthik Kakarala, or Hero Word Elder, said, Brian Michael Bendis' Moon Knight. I'm assuming that's who BMB would be. Because I always wanted a way premature Ultron tie-in and multiple personalities all reading like Spider-Man. Okay.
Get inside baseball on that one from me, Karthik. We heard from Chris Hogan at Unlikely Nerd, and he said, I can't remember if The Long Halloween was 12 or 13 issues, but either way, that's my answer. I think it's 13, but yeah, you can have it.
Okay. Jacob Edwards at Man Punch It said, Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld. My manager gave me the whole series as a gag gift. Joke's on him, it was amazing.
Oh, and we heard from at Astrakis One, who's Newt Lake, Victims Here. Sounds like a warning. It has to be All-Star Superman for me. So many feels there. All-Star Superman's pretty bloody good.
Over on the Facebook page, we heard from Shag Matthews, the Irredeemable Shag. And his response was, really? Is that even a question? Crisis on Infinite Earths. All other opinions are wrong. Whoa, that's a bit strong.
And we also heard from Moby One, who's at Shmoby One, and he intimated that it would be fairly obvious what his answer was, and I predict that it's Crisis on Infinite Earths, as I know him fairly well.
Right. Okay. We also got some actual email this week.
Email.
Ooh. Emails, yes. First from Martin Gray. He says, hello, Harbingers of Doom. Excellent show last week. Well, the bits I heard, as I've still not read the sexy, flexy book Santa brought me. Hopefully I'll get to it this week and be able to appreciate the discussion. It was excellent to have Chris Sabella back. My favorite comic book maxi series is almost the original 12-issue Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld by Mishkin, Cohn, and Colon. He wonders if they're attorneys at law. He goes on to say, Crisis of Infinite Earths by Wolfman and Perez was pretty mind-blowing, but too sprawling to have a gift-wrapped place in my heart. But Squadron Supreme, ah, that's my limited series jam. A year's worth of magnificently plotted superhero soap that asked and answered tough questions about power and responsibility in a far more fun manner than that upstart Watchmen. So the award goes to Grunwald, Ryan, and Hall. Best and most, Mart. Thanks, Martin.
He also said in a tweet that he thought he may just go for Nathaniel Dusk. Maxi series.
I never heard of that one.
I've never read it.
No.
It's written by Don McGregor with Gene Colan art. So that sounds interesting. I think I looked at that at the time and went, that's not superheroes, and just ignored it.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so we also got an email from Kevin, our friend at Astrakis1, who's on the Twitters, and he said, hey guys, that's to us, I already answered the question of the week via Twitter, but I wanted to write about the recent Flex Mentallo episode. First off, it was a weird or perhaps Morrisonian coincidence that I got a Flex commission by Richard Case just before this episode aired. I had narrowed my choices down to him and Dorothy, and who knows why I decided what I did. Anyway, I'll try to keep this brief as I could go on and on about Flex Mentallo series. It's no secret I really love Grant's work. He was the first comic writer to take superheroes beyond the usual for me, and I just kept buying Doom Patrol after the switch from Kupperberg, even though I was maybe a bit too young to fully understand everything that was happening. I especially love how in both Flex and Animal Man he managed to break down the lines between fiction and reality, and the idea in Flex Mentallo of living beings on the verge of extinction saving themselves by becoming fictional beings in another world is an amazing concept. I also fully agree with the Mike Morrison with Mike. Oh, you don't hear that often. Morrison created some pretty fascinating heroes in the Legion of Legions, and I'd love to see him craft some more adventures they had one day down the line. And Wally Sage is in Flex Mentallo is indeed very much like Grant. Based on some of the stuff you said, I'm guessing you guys haven't read Super Gods, his book that's part autobiography, part history of comics, and part dissection of comics and culture. It's a fascinating read and well worth it if you like his comics. You'll get a lot of insight. There's actually an entire chapter devoted to what went on into writing Flex Mentallo, including a strange epiphany while he was visiting Kathmandu. I can't recommend the book enough. Anyway, I'll cut it off there. Keep up the good work with the podcast, and hopefully we can all revel come the fall and Jared Way's take hits the stands. I'm also looking forward to your JL May episode since I finished the first two parts this afternoon as well. Ciao, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
No, I got Super Gods from the library and I read about a third of it and then it was due back and I returned it and I never borrowed it again.
Right.
My life got crazy because I started doing a podcast, which is this.
Well, if you want your free time back, you know, yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Did I just get invited to leave the show during the show?
Anyway, Ange, what's your favorite maxi series?
I'm going to give a couple of answers. I will agree that I absolutely love All-Star Superman, but I never really counted that as a maxi series. I think Crisis is just sort of the maxi series that everything else is compared to. It's almost the gold standard because it changed the universe in a meaningful way. It starred everybody. People still talk pre and post Crisis, so it's had lasting impact. So I'd probably say that that is my favorite, but I'm going to give a caveat that I also absolutely love V for Vendetta, which came out at the perfect time in my life. I was sort of like on the cusp of the end of high school, beginning of college. It was political in nature. It was anti-establishment. It's brilliantly written. So I'm going to give a tie between those two.
Nice. Cool. Doug, what about you?
Why didn't anybody say Secret Wars? Come on. That was tongue in cheek.
Right.
going into this, I thought for sure, hey, Crisis, definitely Crisis on Infinite Earths, because that's what really opened up the DC universe for me. But then I looked back at my bookshelf and noticed Avengers Forever. That gets criminally overlooked, and that's actually... that's by Kurt Busiek and Carlos Pacheco. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful little crazy Avengers adventure that involves Kang and the Kree and Future and Avengers from kind of all over the place, timeline-wise, and just mashes it all together. And there's a little something for everybody in there, if not a whole lot of everybody for something. and it was 12 issues. I remember buying it as a floppy. I bought it as a trade. I bought it as a hardcover. I bought it digital. So, Wow. Yeah, that one kind of wins. It's got crisis beat as far as how many times I've bought it.
Jeez. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not read that, but I think I started to read it, and then I decided I didn't know enough about the Avengers to keep up with it. So,
right.
I'll admit I've never even heard of this, so now I have to sort of hunt it down. It looks, I'm looking at some stuff about it now. It sounds great.
Yeah, and kind of reflecting back to our Snapper Carr conversation, Rick Jones is right in the middle of it too.
Nice.
Awesome. Wow. What about you, Mike?
I'll give two answers. One, to cover superheroics, I'm going to say Crisis of Infinite Earths. That was just huge, and it's one of my favorite trades ever. And it's just got everyone in the DC universe working together and fighting the huge big bad, and oh, it's awesome stuff. But that's going to be my honorable mention. My absolute favorite maxi series, which started out as having just 12, but actually went to 15 issues, so it's kind of bending the rules a little bit, is a story called Alex and Ada from Image Comics. And I know I've talked about this story before, but I love it so much because it's slow and it's sci-fi, and it's like sci-fi 20 minutes from now. It's all quite possible technology you're seeing in it. And the main plot is that this guy gets given a female robot companion, and it's about their relationship and what happens. But it also looks at stuff like identity and how people use technology in their lives and how it affects their lives. And I love it so much. It's a brilliant story. So Alex and Ada for my favorite maxi series. Crisis gets the honorable mention.
Sorry, I'm back. I just went and made a cuppa.
Oh, get you can just go and get you son of a And furthermore, can I just say that anyway, Paul, what's your favorite maxi series?
Well, I got a little bit snookered by the wording that I put out, which was that it was a 12-issue maxi series, because then I realized I didn't really want to say a 12-issue one. So I thought of 12 issues that I really love, and I came up with the Kronos series from DC in the early 2000s, I'm thinking, which is a very good take on the time traveler Kronos, because he gets time traveling powers, and so he goes back and sees the Beatles before they were famous and things like that. Right. And then he discovers a whole community of time traveling people, and it's not all sucky like the Kronos has been in DC's Legends of Tomorrow, or Declot, as I like to call it. So that was a beautiful series, and I can't remember who. John Francis Moore wrote it, I believe, and okay. And it had art by Paul Guinan, who I think he did some Fables and stuff like that. So it was a very Vertigo series, but it was set in the DCU, so it was very cool. So that's 12 issues, but that was never intended to be a maxi series. It was just 12 issues because it got cancelled, let's face it.
Right.
So let's talk a maxi series proper, and this one isn't 12 issues, I'm cheating a bit here, but I really love Peter David's The Atlantis Chronicles. It's a fantastic series. It's sort of like Game of Thrones underwater before Game of Thrones existed. Wow. So, yeah. And it was very cool. And it had beautiful art by a bloke I can't remember. Any of you guys familiar with that one?
I can vaguely recall seeing ads for it in DC Comics, but I've never read it.
Yeah, I recall it, but I've never read it.
Yeah, same here.
Hey, I got the trifecta.
It's Aquaman, so.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I'm very impressed that each of us had quite a diverse spread of our favorite series there. That was really cool to hear.
Well, we
practiced. One said Watchmen. I'm sorry. No one said Watchmen, which I think is incredible. Because you think that would be such an easy answer to say.
Yeah.
Well, you've already lent your copy. That's why you didn't say it. Callback to last there. Very good. I think the reason Atlantis Chronicles isn't famous or well-known is because it was never collected for some reason. And okay. I think it's one of the best things Peter David ever wrote. And, you know, I think it's a travesty that it was never collected, because it would be one of those books that would be said in the same breath as things like Watchmen and V for Vendetta if it had been collected. So that's my sweeping statement. Maybe Rob Kelly will agree with me on that. Anyway, I guess that's it for the Mailbag of Doom. Well, thank you everyone for listening to our part of JL May. If you like our podcast stylings, we do this most weeks, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. We're taking a break, I'm sorry. So if you want to get in touch with us, we're on Twitter. You can get in touch with Wilfred, our Sentient Show Twitter account, at WFDpod. You can send us an email like people did at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Facebook page just for Shag. He's the only one ever uses it. And our next topics are, well, thank you, Ange and Doug, for joining us today.
Yes, thanks, guys. Great to have you back again. Yeah.
Yes, fabulous to have more Doom Patrol fans in the mix with us. And next time we come back, we'll be in 2 weeks' time. We're going to look at Volume 1 of Doom Patrol, issues 109 and 110. I won't tell you what it's about, but it's got a lot of Beast Boy. I'll say that. And our question of the week is... or the question of the fortnight in this case, is what's the saddest comic you've read?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Mm. So you guys are going to be gone for 2 weeks and you're making us sad?
Sad-er.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Sorry. We just need a breather just to recuperate, come back refreshed and ready to share the love of Doom Patrol with you guys and all our other listeners with even more strength behind us. Go team.
Yeah, we ran the numbers. We've actually done 13 episodes in a row with this episode, so that's our longest stint without a break. And we're wussing out on you all. So yeah, we'll be back in a fortnight. But I mean, there's tons to listen to in the meantime. You might get some more JL May episodes in. And, there's lots of great podcasts out there. If you contact me on Twitter, I'll tell you a dozen good podcasts that you can listen to. Yeah. And one bad one, just to trick you. Anyway, we'll see you all next time. Bye.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Thank you, guys.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
G'day mate, back in 1994, Mark Waid, Brian Augustin and Barry Kitson began exploring the beginning of the world's greatest superhero team over an epic 12-issue comic maxi series. And crikey, this comic was a beaut. That team was the Justice League of Australia, and that comic was JLA Year One. 2016, a number of podcasts will come together to cover this series in a single month. That month is JL Mate. Featuring the Dundee cast, the Steve Irwin cast, Tasmanian Devil, the only Australian superhero cast, Koala Bears and their odd popularity in the 1970s, the Sydney Opera House, Every Animal on This Continent Can Kill You podcast, and Why Are All Australian Actresses Drop Dead Gorgeous podcast. Each podcast will cover one or two issues of JLA Year One, and then the coverage will move from show to show. It all starts with the Fire and Water podcast with issues 1 and 2. That's a fair dinkum. JL Mate, an epic month for an epic series. And Struth, sit back, enjoy, and throw another shrimp on the barbie. Good on you, mate.